I'm Wayne Lesprince, professor of political science at New England College. America is a promise. It is a promise fulfilled by engaged and informed citizens. At NEC, we believe in learning by doing. That's why I'm excited to announce our new Master of Arts in Public Policy with classes starting this January. This program is designed for you and takes advantage of our Concord location just steps from the State House on Main Street. Attend classes fully online or one night per week. Learn more online at nec.edu/public policy.
Welcome to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, and brought to you by The Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. I'm joined by Chris Ryan. Seems to be in good health and good humor. Chris Ryan, what a week it's been. What a week it's going to be. Now, as we sit here this afternoon.
Before you get started, I got something to address.
What do you want to talk about?
There is no way on earth that Donald Trump is 239 pounds. It is not possible.
Well, he's not 6'3 either.
No, I'm 6'1". He's taller than I am.
Okay.
Maybe the hair might have...
He's 6'3". That hair takes a lot of time in the morning.
I will be honest with you right now. I weigh 237 pounds. I am not nearly as big as Donald Trump is.
Donald's a big guy. He's a big...
At least 280 pounds.
Well, he packs a mean punch, that Donald Trump, and you watch him on the golf course. And I mean, I am the last person in the world to fat shame anybody. Never said anything to you. I think about me. You know, the reason I'm on radio is because I've got a face for radio. I was on MSNBC the other day. I saw myself and I said, holy mackerel, I can do something about my size. I can't do anything about my age, but good God, what's going on? Because, you know, you have a few cheeseburgers, you eat a few French fries, you follow it with a few chicken nuggets, you take a dozen or so Diet Cokes, and pretty soon you're not in great health. And I don't know what kind of exercise the poor guy gets.
I'm not fat. Let me be really clear here. I am not fat shaming Donald Trump. I'm just saying that he is. There's
no way.
You mean
he's lying about his weight too?
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying anything in regards to people being overweight. I'm just saying that he's lying about his weight. He's not 239 pounds.
Wait a second. Did he put that out, or did Dr. misspelled Ronnie Jackson put it out?
The doctor put it out.
Okay, the doctor put it out.
The doctor's lying too.
The doctor's lying too. That's a Navy doctor. He's been the doctor.
He's lying. He's not 239 pounds.
He's been the doctor for the White House for a number of different presidents.
There is no way on earth that I am 237 pounds and Donald Trump is 239 pounds. It just is not possible. He's taller than I am and he's bigger than I am. There is no way that he is 239 pounds.
So here you heard it here first, folks. We're calling on the President of the United States to come clean. I will personally bring a scale to the White House as a neutral observer and let Donald stand on it. I would say without any clothes, but he can wear his clothes and I'll knock off some for clothing. But I want to see the President of the United States on a scale with neutral observation, just like it was an election in one of those countries that he was talking about in the White House, just like in one of those foreign countries where foreigners come from.
Like it'll be like when Tyson and, you know, like Buster Douglas would weigh in for a fight. And they stand there, they get on the scale, Don King holds up your hand, and you tell everybody how great you are, and it's perfect.
I want to be able to tweet a screenshot of the real weight that the president comes in at around the world. I want to say, folks, we had neutral observers like it was the UN, just like the UN neutrally observing what's going on in the White House. But what kind of person in a bipartisan meeting about immigration lets it hang out the way the Donald let it hang out this week? That the his comments, his use of the term blank hole countries has reverberated around the world with denials and not real denials and explanations and not real explanations. A GOP lawmaker who came to his aid and support and said, you know, Haiti really has real trouble. It's a place where they've got real trouble there. But just think about the leader of the free world, upon whom the world depends for leadership and guidance and moral support, and referring to 54 countries in Africa plus a bunch of people a lot closer to us as blank hole countries. Folks, I the word is really not so bad. It's a colloquialism that is used affectionately and not affectionately in all kinds of ways to describe the excrement that is produced by mammals. So I'm just being clear that I'm complying with everything that the FCC wants me to apply to, but I'm blanking out on the actual four-letter word used by our colloquial president. What kind of person does that? Chris Ryan, tell me. Help me here. You're the voice of independence and sanity while I'm the left-wing nut job. Help me out here.
I don't know, man. I just I don't know. I can't even put myself in that mold where I could do that.
Imagine you're Dick Durbin.
Right, and you are in the midst of negotiating something that is incredibly significant. And you have a bunch of individuals who don't really want to negotiate with you all that much to begin with. And then you just really throw it all out there for them to have complete reason not to play nice with you at all. And again, I don't think that the problem was, you know, the expletive used. I think that Haiti's in tough shape. I think that that's fair. I don't think that referring to Haiti as a blank hole country is racist in itself. But there was something in common about all the countries that he described. And some of those countries were pretty nice, and the people who came from those countries were doctors and economists. And he was describing, you know, that he didn't want individuals coming from those countries. So it wasn't just that he was describing, you know, Haiti, which has had a massive hurricane and has extremely difficult economy. He's talking about the people.
Well, I'm Norman from Norway, and I'm here in Norway and Oslo. And I'm very happy to visit you on Off the Record with Paul Holtz. I hear that your president, Donald Trump, has invited me, Norman from Norway, to come to America and emigrate. I have to tell the Donald Trump that I'm not coming to America. I like Norway very much. This is Off the Record with Paul Holtz here on WKXL-AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, taking you inside the White House on this wintry weekend. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour, celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We'll be back after the break to talk with Ned Helms.
I'm joined by Chuck Douglas from Douglas, Leonard & Garvey here in Concord. And if I was recently in an auto accident and was hurt, how do I pay for medical bills and make sure that I get the care that I deserve?
Your auto insurance policy has something called med pay or medical payments coverage, and that's money you can use to help pay for copays or for procedures not covered by your health insurance. The advantage of using med pay coverage is that you do not have to pay that back to anyone. Whereas if you use your health insurance in an accident, that health insurance company will put a lien on because they want to get repaid out of whatever you recover. Because this can get complicated, you can get more information in our free ebook on injuries in New Hampshire at nhlawoffice.com. Again, that's nhlawoffice.com. We fight to get what you deserve.
This information is for general purposes only and should not be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation.
Welcome back to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streamed live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, and still coming to you from our sensational Bunker Radio studio on Reddington Road, right here in Concord, New Hampshire. We are brought to you by The Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community, designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at The Birches. Call 224-9111. Well, I'm really very pleased to welcome our next guest to Off the Record. I've known Ned Helms for a long, long time. Ned and I go way back, and we both have faces for radio, so that's the good news. Ned's career has been illustrious, to say the least. He is a proud veteran, having served in the Army in Vietnam. He's been a candidate for Congress, candidate for governor. He ran the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. He is a guy who knows everything there is to know about health care, among other things, a world traveler. He's just an all-around great guy.
I can't wait to meet this guy, whoever it is you're introducing. I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm happy to
I hope
have
he drops
you.
In soon.
Yeah, well, he might just have a conversation. So look, let's first talk about some really fun stuff. You and your wife, the fabulous Sally Helms, are travelers. You perhaps are the best traveled couple that I know. I mean, we've traveled together. You go all over. Most recently, you visited Belle Italia. You've been to Italy. You've been to Ireland recently. Some of what I'm really curious about is what you heard and what you've heard in your travels from folks about what they're thinking about America. I mean, what do people say? What's going on in their minds when they see what's happened to our country?
Well, for decades, we've celebrated New Year's with our friends Mike and Joy Degnan here in town. And after the kids had left, we started saying to each other, hey, we don't have to stick around in Concord. We could go someplace else. Fun. And so for the last, I don't know, half dozen years or so, we've been taking a trip every New Year's. So I'll quickly go through the last 3 years. 2 years ago, we went to Ireland. And we were sitting in this great hotel on New Year's Eve, sitting with a family from Ireland. We'd never met him before. And the conversation goes on. And sooner or later, the guy says, hey, can I ask you guys a question?
I have a question for you.
I have a question for you. And I'd like you to be real straight on me here. I really need to know.
I need you to be totally honest.
You Americans aren't going to be so crazy as to elect Donald Trump, are you? And, of course, Mike and Joy and Sally and I assured him, of course we're not. And there were, just conversations about what it would mean. And they had great, great affection for our former president. President Obama, but
well,
nonetheless,
that's because President Obama was Irish.
Irish. Obama.
Where do you think you get the name O'Bama?
There you go. So at any rate, there we were in Ireland, assuring that all would go well. And then last year we were in Amsterdam, and no one said a thing to us. But we got to know the woman at the desk in this lovely little hotel we were staying in, and Sally said to her, "You know, you haven't said anything to us about our election. What do you think people think?" And she said, "Well, you have to be careful. Because you don't know that who you're talking to might share your political beliefs." But she said people were just thunderstruck. And they're very afraid of what might happen if, that wave. They were looking at Marie Le Pen in France. They were looking at Donald Trump. And as you know, the Netherlands had an election. And they were very relieved that spring when they did not get the hard right person. But she said we were just floored.
Right.
Couldn't believe it. And then this year – we were in Italy. We were in Venice, and we were also in Rome. And
Rome.
Beautiful.
Did
just
they have
beautiful.
Any Italian food?
They had some Italian food, and gosh, it tasted so Italian. I couldn't believe it. But again, the same type of thing. It's not something that you just talk about madly, but it's a shaking of their heads, and it's sort of Does he really say those things? Does he really believe those things? Does this really represent America? I remember Sally telling me a story when she was in college. She worked for a summer over in England. And I remember her telling me back then that people were asking questions about the United States, and they'd say, does everybody carry a gun? You know, are they all cowboys? Because it's a stereotype. You know, what are these people like? And they take what they see and then generalize from that. And if you elect this guy as president against somebody that they knew fairly well in Hillary Clinton because of some, I think, still strong international affection for Bill Clinton and for the work that his foundation's done around the world, and they're sort of saying, you did what?
Right.
Sort of the same thing that I think a lot of us who happen to share our philosophy look at each other and say, did we really just do that?
Well, you know, I mean, America, all despite the Donald's seeming desire to isolate us from the world, a new kind of isolationism, a new kind of nativism, you could call it. You know, I mean, when he talks about America first, he means, you know, we're an island protected by the oceans. We don't need anybody, and I guess nobody needs us, according to the Donald. But we exist on a really small, really fragile planet in which both the new technologies of information flow and digital technology, as well as advances in transportation and trade, tell us every day that there is no such thing as isolation anymore. The world is an interconnected, interdependent place with some enjoying, like the United States of America, greater wealth and benefits than almost everybody else everywhere in the world. And so America has been looked to in foreign relations, certainly since World War II, as the indispensable partner.
That's right.
When it comes to peacemaking power, and a stable planet.
And I think that people were shocked by a couple jolts, I think. The Brexit vote, I think, upset the industrialized nations of the world. Then Donald Trump's election. Then our backing away from the Paris agreements on climate change. And all of a sudden, you have a world looking at a country that had been a leader, and Obama playing a leading role in brokering what people thought was absolutely impossible, which is coming together around climate change with, you know, with China, with Russia, with others. The fact that we had stopped Iran in its tracks from developing a nuclear weapon and had done that, again, with China and Russia and other developed nations. And then all of a sudden, you've got somebody who's saying America first. And it's not just America first. It's like America only, and we don't need you. And then the latest references, which we've seen in the last few days from our president about some of the developing nations in the world and his characterization of them, which will remain unnamed because everybody knows what we're talking about.
Well, it's radio. It's family radio.
That's right.
Here.
Unless you've been in a hole somewhere.
Unless you've been digging a hole somewhere and covered yourself.
But
over.
It just and that, I think, is the real danger because, you and I have talked about Tom Friedman and the work that he has done with his piece, what was it, 7 years ago, about the world is flat, about all the things that are going on that bring us closer and closer and more interdependent. And more recognizing ourselves. And as an example, the Chinese and the Russians are all over the continent of Africa, especially the Chinese, developing, doing new things.
Opening markets.
54 countries on that continent, 54 countries, and they're working closely with them. And we have a president that refers to them in a demeaning way. That's cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Well, and this week, if I read it correctly, the Germans, through Angela Merkel, basically issued a statement that was really a kind of groundbreaking rejection – of the new America, the new great America that Donald Trump is so eager to create. And they basically said, we no longer trust America to be the partner that it has been or says it wants to be. We cannot trust America to uphold international accords. We can't trust America anymore in the way that America has been seen as the guarantor of stability.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're going to have to, you know, look, you know, lead our own way. Now, on the one hand, that is a role that Germany has been playing in the industrialized European world. They have been increasingly, over the past year, been seen as the leader because of the strength of their economy
and the clarity
of their leadership. But to put it in writing and to say it out loud ought to be sending shockwaves up and down Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, I remember listening to a commentator in the not too far distant past, and he was referring to the fact that in media you hear the word the new normal. And he said, I need to remind everybody, it's new, but there is absolutely nothing normal about this behavior. Nothing at all. And things that would have stopped us dead in our tracks on issues before don't anymore. For instance, when we all the stuff that we've been doing about immigration, and you hear the leaders of the mecca of medicine in the world, in Boston, saying, we're losing people to France and to Germany who otherwise would have come here and practiced and done their research. The latest thing with DACA, there was a series of interviews recently with young people, all of whom had graduated from the University of Southern California. And they were saying, well, you know, what happens when, you know, they've been there since they were 9 years old. They'd never lived in Mexico that they could remember or whatever country they'd come from. And they're saying, well, you know, this is like a guillotine hanging over you. So what are you thinking of doing? Not going to go back to Mexico. I know nothing about it, but I'll go to another country. And so all these bright, able people, and you look at all the way we have caricatured them. Or the way Trump has attempted to is, you know, these people are shiftless and they're blah, 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 blah. Well, they've got a lower crime rate and higher income than native-born Americans.
Remember, the Donald started his campaign
with the Mexicans
by complaining about Mexican rapists.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's hard to say that anybody ought to be surprised by what's happened. But when you take a look around the world at the state of the world, and you mentioned Tom Friedman before.
Yeah.
He has a new book out, which I have just almost done with, called Thank You for Being Late, An Optimist's Guide to the Age of Acceleration, in which he talks about the way the changes in technology have changed the world. And he talks about the challenge of climate change and the danger it faces. And, you know, when you think about international cooperation and international stature and international leadership in a world where the ice caps are melting, the seas are rising, people are being displaced, and if you look at the roots of a lot of the disorder and the chaos in the world, Friedman does an extraordinary job at pointing out that it is the failure of agriculture due to droughts in places where there had been food that is driving a chaos, rebellion, and dissension, that the waves upon waves of human migration out of Africa, out of the Middle East, driven by that chaos and by climate failure and climate disaster are directly attributable to climate change, so that we're we and the world and our security and the stability of the world is really dependent on whether or not we galvanize the world, or the world can be galvanized around addressing climate change.
Well, and the thing is to me that you remember back in, I think it was late 2016, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, before congressional hearings, were asked, what is the largest threat to world peace? And unanimously, they said, It's climate change.
But now that Trump...
And now, this is now a left-wing... You know, they're not left-wing thinkers.
The Trump administration has now basically banned its agencies from using the terms climate change or global warming. So it's a mystery.
Yeah.
We're talking to Ned Helms on Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. Now, folks, don't go away. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and Ned and I will talk a little bit about the state of health care in New Hampshire and the nation. We'll be right back.
Why are people throughout New England traveling to Concord, New Hampshire for their new car or truck? Is it the enormous selection with over 2,000 vehicles in stock at banks? Is it the price with the lowest, most transparent pricing at banks? Is it the service with friendly, no-pressure atmosphere at banks? Yes, yes. And yes, as New England's highest volume GM dealer, we encourage you to visit our dealership to experience the bank's difference. We know that price matters, and banks offers the lowest, most transparent pricing around. With our full-service internet department, you can browse online or call ahead to take care of most of the details before you even walk through the door.
Lease a 2018 GMC Sierra Double Cab for only $280 per month with zero down. Payment for current lessees for 36 months includes select bonus cash with credit approval.
GMC, we are professional grade. Bank Chevrolet Buick GMC in Concord, New Hampshire. Real prices, huge inventory, always in stock. BanksAutos.com.
We're back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com. You can now find the Facebook page for Off the Record with Paul Hodes on Facebook. Please visit our page and like us. I want, as they used to say, Al Franken used to say on Saturday Night Live, and they like me. So like me on Facebook. We're talking with Ned Helms. I gave him a lengthy and fabulous introduction that he, of course, has lived up to in the first part of this chat. But now, Ned, I want to talk a little bit about healthcare. The news of the moment is about a budget deal. We'll see where things go, and as of this time, we don't know whether government is up, government is down, government is over, government is in, government is out. But certainly, in the tax reform bill that was passed, there were some pretty heavy cuts made to the Affordable Care Act, mm-hmm. or Obamacare, as it's affectionately known. By those, including me, who probably lost an election in 2010 because people were just too upset about the government spending their money to take over their health care with Obamacare, but don't you dare touch my Medicare. So with that as a little background,
yes, sir.
How's health care doing in New Hampshire? Are we how are we placed and how are we situated if Obamacare is caused to fail by Trump and the Republicans, which is what they want to do?
Well, I think it would be catastrophic for the state of New Hampshire because what has happened, first of all, if you look at the acceleration of healthcare costs, it's going up in every industrialized nation. All the costs are going up. But we start off by spending twice as much as the median of every other industrialized nation on the face of the planet, and we still have people who aren't covered, about 10%, but we've cut that in half. There are 50,000 people who have health insurance now who are able to go in and get primary care, whereas before they had to get sick and go into a emergency room.
So look, can I just back up?
Sure.
I just want to make sure that I don't miss the points you made. When you say we spend twice as much as any other industrialized nation, you don't mean in total dollars.
I mean
especially
per capita.
What you mean in per person.
Per person.
Our costs for health care are double.
Absolutely.
And of course, our results, even with all the great health care we have, our results are not proportionate to spending twice as much money.
Not only not proportionate, but if you look at the other, I can't even remember what the initial stands for, OECD nations, which are the industrialized nations. If you look at outcomes in terms of infant mortality, length of life, deaths due to things that are preventable, we come in about 19th out of 19 nation on almost all those standards. Now, we have extraordinarily curative powers. We have amazing technology. But the reality is that those aren't the things, dramatic as they are, that really save lives. Good primary care, having patients with diabetes or congestive heart failure, taking care of themselves and working with their clinician so that their results are better, because so much of our healthcare costs are consumed by people who have a chronic disease which needs good management. And if you provide that good management, their outcomes are fine. And it does a lot more than the things that get our attention, like miraculous machines and extraordinary organ transplants. They get the drama, but they don't get at the fundamentals. And so we've really been focusing on the fundamentals. There's a huge effort going on in this state right now that's run by the institute that I used to guide at the University of New Hampshire, now being led by Joe Porter. We're in the offices of about 1,000 clinicians, and this is a tri-state effort with Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. And we are hiring clinicians, nurses primarily, who are going out into those practices to say, how can we improve the quality of your work? What are some tips that have been learned in other practices that we'll share with you so you can improve the outcome?
How's this being funded?
It's being funded by the federal government. It's being funded by the federal government.
Does Donald Trump know this?
He knows it, and if the next budget comes out and those dollars aren't there, we're going to be up the creek without a paddle.
So was this funded under the Affordable Care Act?
It's a component of it, because there was a thing that really wasn't trumpeted about the Affordable Care Act. But it was the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, CMMI.
Well, wait a second. That's what the Republicans called the death panels.
Well, I mean, they called a lot of things a lot of things. I mean, it would be like somebody yelling back in the day of John F. Kennedy, we can't go to the moon because it's made of green cheese. You know, something like that. And Walter Cronkite would have taken off his glasses and said, that's foolish. And that would have been the end of the debate. But
it's pretty good messaging.
Death panels.
It worked in 2010.
Well, and frankly, for those of us who are my age and a little bit younger, who have moms and dads, we're dealing with that in terms of the quality of their life. And Sally's mom just passed away, and the quality of her life was excellent right up to the very end. Both my mom and dad were able to be at home where they wanted to be with hospice care. And they had clinicians that understood that at the end of life, there are important decisions to be made. It's not about death panels, about you go die, that person goes die. It's how do we preserve the quality of your life to be at a level that you want until you leave it. And yet, we let these bumper sticker phrases color our thinking.
So you were saying that in the Affordable Care Act, there were programs created, including the Center for Medicare
and Medicaid Innovation.
Essentially. Innovation. And why was it necessary, and what does it do?
It goes back to what I just said before. If you're spending twice as much as everybody else and not getting better outcomes than them, in fact, getting worse outcomes, you must be doing something wrong. What are we doing wrong? There was a study done by the Milliman Group. This is not a left-wing group. This is a bunch of actuaries. And it was back in 2007. It was called Imagining 16 to 12. 16% of our gross domestic product at that time was being spent on healthcare. And they said, what would we have to do if we wanted to bring it down to 12? And here was their conclusion. What we would have to do is to replicate the best performing systems in the United States. There are places in Grand Junction, Colorado, where they have Medicare costs that are the lowest in the country, and their quality is the highest in the country. if we were doing
with
as
the same
well,
population.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And probably the source of the best information on comparative healthcare costs and outcomes comes from Dartmouth. The Dartmouth Atlas has been going on for decades now. A guy named Jack Winberg started it. A guy named Elliot Fisher is running it today. And they basically have been tracing Medicare costs across healthcare systems in every hospital district in the country. And they've been identifying what works. What works? And it's very simple stuff. It's making sure that people with chronic disease have good case management. It's making sure that at the beginning of the day, you have a team huddle so everybody knows precisely who's coming in, what they need, and that everything's ready for them when they come in. It's making sure that if you have a population with chronic disease, which consumes a lot of the work, if you add in depression with a chronic disease, the medical costs of that individual quadruple. So what do you want to do? You want to find those folks and you want to get them into a healthier place. And so it's not like we're sitting around saying, oh my God, we have no ideas. We have ideas. And at the center of the Affordable Care Act was this Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation that said, if there's a promising practice, if there's a great idea out there, let's test it. Let's pilot it. Let's measure it. And if we're sure it's work, let's replicate it as broadly as we can.
So, I mean, you know, when I have talked to people about healthcare and the Affordable Care Act and the investment in the Affordable Care Act, of course, all the fire and light and heat goes to issues around, well, here's what we did to control the abuses by insurance companies. We made sure that there was coverage up to 26 on your parents' policy, and they couldn't knock you off if you developed a condition. They couldn't put a lifetime cap on. They had to take you with pre-existing conditions. And all of that, I mean, when I talk about it, it's as if I divide my brain in half and I see the right side of the equation as all the stuff that gets talked about, the stuff that is about coverage and about the cost at the point of delivery of care. But then on the whole left side of my brain, there's like a dividing line. There's this whole left side, which is about how do we move the healthcare system from, and this is both Medicare as well as non-Medicare at the moment in our system of private insurance companies and a mix of not-for-profit and profit providers and all that. How do we move an entire system from paying for quantity of care to quality of care?
And that's moving. It's moving in Medicare in terms of a lot of their reimbursement is going to be based on outcomes as opposed to process. You know, you can do a perfectly executed test on someone, and if they don't need the test in the first place, you've wasted your money. You can do a procedure that, if it's not required, can be done exquisitely, but it doesn't improve the health. So that's why the Center for Health, the Institute for Health Improvement, the IHI, came up with a thing called the Triple Aim. It was a doc, name is Don Berwick, very close to the Dartmouth folks, and he came up with the Triple Aim. And the Triple Aim is simply this. Number one, the goal is improving population health. That's what we want to do. We want to make the herd healthier as a whole. The second is we want to make sure that when care is given, it's absolutely the right treatment, given at the right time, in the right place, with appropriate outcomes. And the third is we need to lower the cost of care. And the Affordable Care Act addressed all three of those. But as you said, all the spotlights and all the thing was on Medicaid, expanding Medicaid.
We did in New Hampshire.
We did.
50,000.
Tens of thousands of people.
50,000 new people
and if you
were
look
insured.
And if you look at it, first of all, the people that were getting that expansion, almost all of them were working. If you trace their outcomes, they're now healthier than they were before. And talk to the hospital association about the impact, because you don't have people who are not going through the appropriate primary care and are showing up in an emergency room, can't possibly afford the emergency room, and so they are either free care or bad debt for the hospitals. So it is an economic winner. In other words, we are covering those people, and the hospitals aren't having to absorb it because they don't just absorb it. They pass it on. It makes the premiums of the people that are insured higher. So if we knock those folks up, premiums are going to go up, and hospital industry is going to take a hit, and the population's not going to be healthier.
So let me be clear and make sure I understand the economic consequences. I don't have to worry about Medicaid at the moment. Because why? I'm on Medicare. So great. I'm not worried about Medicaid. I'm on Medicare, which seems to be doing pretty well for me. But if I am insured through my employer, or am paying for individual insurance, or I'm buying insurance out there in the marketplace, in a world where I only care about myself, why should I care about what happens with Medicaid?
So your premiums are going to go through the roof.
And that's because if those 50,000 people now insured through Medicaid with a federal government program that helps pay for them to get the care they need, if that goes away or it's diminished or the subsidies are cut, then those folks are going to not be able to go to see primary care. They'll end up in emergency rooms. Because they're in emergency rooms and they're not being paid for their bad debt, the hospitals raise their prices and costs. That gets passed along to the insurance companies, who raise everybody's premiums to pay for those who can't get insurance.
That's why one of the strongest voices for Medicaid expansion and the continuation of expansion is a business and industry association. They understand that in spades, because not only are their employees going to pay a higher premium, but where there's a cost share and the business is paying a percentage and the individual is paying a percentage, that's coming off their bottom line.
So, folks, we've been talking to Ned Helms here on Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, streamed live over the internet, brought to you by the Birches Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. Ned, we're going to have you back because we've got a lot to talk about.
I love doing it, Paul.
Okay, folks, don't go away. I'll be back in a minute to wrap up Off the Record with Paul Hodes.
Hi, this is Paul Hodes, and I want to talk to you about a truly inspirational place, the Birches at Concord. It's New Hampshire's first assisted living community for seniors, designed specifically for individuals living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Please join us for a tour and celebrate life at the Birches. I know from experience that memory impairment weighs heavily on the individual affected, but also the loved ones surrounding them. Please call the Birches at Concord at 603-224-9111.
We're back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community, designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. Well, on this lovely wintry weekend, what a nice time we've had here in the Reddington Road Studios at WKXL. Chris Ryan and I talked a little bit about what's going on at Pennsylvania Avenue. What's the latest madness? What kind of words are coming out? What do they mean? How are they taken? And where is our government going? And Ned Helms and I talked about the way that the rest of the world is looking at America and what's going on with health care in New Hampshire. We just touched on that subject. We're going to have him back, but I want to thank all our listeners, thank our sponsors for joining us here on Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, streamed live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
I'm Wayne Lesprince, professor of political science at New England College. America is a promise. It is a promise fulfilled by engaged and informed citizens. At NEC, we believe in learning by doing. That's why I am excited to announce our new Master of Arts in Public Policy, with classes starting this January. This program is designed for you and takes advantage of our Concord location just steps from the State House on Main Street. Attend classes fully online or one night per week. Learn more online at nec.edu/public policy.